like, I just want to say, like, Frederick, I'm sure you can confirm this too, that as archaeologists, we love talking about what we do, and we will happily talk your ear off about the things that we are interested in, that we're working on, because we like them and we want other people to know how cool and exciting these things are too. So the idea that, you know, again, like big archaeology and there's like this weird shadowy consortium of archaeologists who are hiding information. It's like, no, you have literally never met an archaeologist, because we will keep talking forever.
No. You will know that you met one. That's for sure.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual. In this episode, we are finally tackling everyone's favorite, or I guess I should probably more accurately say most hated, pseudo-archaeology topic, ancient aliens. And to do this, I am joined by two what we are calling substitute sisters today, since Paige is not with us, archaeologist and television producer Annalise, who has been on the show before to talk about the ancient Egyptians, and archaeologist and host of the podcast Digging Up Ancient Aliens, Frederick. So I'm really excited that you guys are here. You guys are way more experts at this than me, so I'm excited to hear your perspectives on this. But first, Annalise, do you want to reintroduce yourself, remind people who you are, what you do, and if there's anything new to share since we had you on last?
Sure. Well, like you said, I'm Annalise. I'm everyone's friendly neighborhood archaeologist and a TV producer. That's my day job. And yeah, I don't think there's actually been anything new, really, or notable since I was last on. I don't actually remember when it was, because it seems like it was a million years ago. I think at the time, maybe I was working and then had the winter unemployment season, which is totally normal for TV production. And now I'm working again. So it's back to the chaos.
Awesome. Okay. And then, Frederick, I would love for you to introduce yourself. In particular, I would love for you to take some time to tell us a little bit about your podcast, what inspired it, your background, stuff like that, because I'm very interested in it.
Sure. So I'm Frederick from Sweden. So if I get some accent or say some weird sentence because I translate Swedish directly to English suddenly, be prepared. But I have a background in archaeology. I studied it on a small island in the Baltic Sea called Gotland for about 4 years, focusing more on the Scandinavian Iron Age, the later, so Vendel and the Viking Age especially, and more towards how kids were perceived in that timeline. But I started my podcast Digging Up Ancient Aliens because during the corona lockdown and everything, I sat at home and started to think, what can I do to combat pseudoscience? And I can't really go and give medical advice because I'm not a doctor. That would be a bit unethical.
That doesn't stop a lot of people.
That's true.
It stopped me, and I'm happy about that. But then I thought, maybe pseudoscience archaeology. And unfortunately, back then, the podcast that I really liked wasn't really putting out any new shows currently. Now they're back with a different host, but then they, Archaeological Fantasies, then they were on a hiatus. So I felt, I can feel some shoe there, but I don't want to do exactly like they. But I heard about this ancient alien stuff, and I, you know, met it a few times. It can't be too bad. And then I start to watch it, and I haven't really been myself ever since.
It does have that effect on people. And I love how the COVID lockdowns in 2020 were the thing that inspired both of us to do things. It's like, that's what started my adventure with like making little videos and putting them on the internet. I mean, it started with Instagram and then it moved to TikTok, but I love that that's how it started things for you too.
Same here.
Yeah, but I felt it was, even if I had this idea, maybe I should start something you know, the misinformation, everything during the COVID pandemic got so blatantly obvious that I realized that we need to have academics and scientists and people in between being out there and putting out better information, because people are interested in, you know, listen to it. And when they're curious, they should find good sources on top of all.
Absolutely.
Other, you know, there's a bunch of ancient alien podcasts out there. Everyone is pro alien. So, you know, would be something to balance up somewhere in between.
Yes. And we have talked about this on this podcast before, how for a long time, academia has been sort of separate from the general public and a little bit inaccessible. And there's this idea of the ivory tower. And yeah, it's so important to have people bridging that gap to the public more and more. And we will get into it. But like, yeah, my whole opinion is that like stuff like ancient aliens, like that's sort of just like, that becomes, I don't know, it feels to me like a turning point in everything that's going on right now, from like the anti-vax stuff, the distrust of science. Like there's going to be a lot of rage this episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And the crossover is quite interesting. They come with medical advice in the show. I don't remember exactly what episode, but they bring up, for example, that people that have mental health issues, for example, delusions or vocal hallucinations or auditory hallucinations, actually is being contacted by aliens.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So, you know, they go into all the areas.
Yes. Find. Yeah. It's a very wide and deep pool of, for lack of a nicer word, crazy, that gets delved into. Yeah, and so you have been, I guess, more or less going sequentially through the show, addressing sort of specific episodes, or has that shifted, or how far have you made it?
No, I started with the first season, and each episode was 1.5 hours, so I realized I need to split those up in two, because it was rough with 1.5 hour episode and try to break it down, because it's so much stuff in them.
Yeah.
And they really go, there's one thing, there's one thing, there's one thing. It's like, you know, they prepared for an audience that's super high, so they need to have something to catch their attention every 2 seconds, basically. otherwise, they lose them. But
yeah.
I was a lot angrier in the first few episodes, because I think that's normal when you watch it, and for the first season, I had to stop every 5 minutes and go around a little bit and talk angry to myself and mutter.
Yeah, you definitely have to budget in yelling at the TV time.
Yeah, you need to have it, but now I'm having a bit more friendlier approach when I got used to it, is maybe the sad word, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yes. Well, I can relate. I think we did a couple episodes early on the Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh my God.
I don't know, whatever is going on out there. And that the TV show had just come out, like when we had started. So I was like, Paige, we're going to watch this and we're going to like talk about all the things. And I think I made it like 2 episodes into the show and was like, I cannot take this. Like, there's just no way I can watch this whole thing.
Even that one is just like a bunch of dudes running around in the dark, right? Like, it's not even a ghost show where it's like, oh, maybe a door closed, or like there was a spooky
one.
It's like, no, it's just like guys in the dark.
Yeah, like periodically they're like, oh, weird gas or a light or
a lizard,
like,
or something,
a radiation or something. And it's like, what are you? It's just a bunch of idiots running around. But it was so frustrating, and just like in the end was just a whole bunch of nothing. And I think Paige made it through all the episodes. I think I watched the first couple, and then I was like, I'm just going to watch the finale and like see where this ends up at the end of the season. And yeah, I don't think I missed anything doing it that way.
We have a term for that in the industry, and that's a nothing burger.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, before we jump into, I guess, the meat and potatoes of it all, we can do something spooky. So I'll make Annalise go first because she's had to do this before. But Annalise, has anything spooky happened to you lately?
No, I think I made it through the entirety of spooky season without anything spooky actually happening.
Okay.
So I am sad to report that there have been no spooky happenings.
And Frederick, has anything spooky happened to you recently?
Not really. Or I work currently at a tech company and we're not firing people. That's a little bit spooky.
Hey!
Yeah! They must have made the correct sacrifice to whatever.
Yeah, whatever the god of budgets and HR to keep right. Everybody on staff.
Yeah, the HR staff is deep into the occult, you know, with all the candles.
Again, if it works, it works.
Great. Well, I also have not really had anything personally spooky happen beyond. You might notice my voice sounds a little bit funny because I have a cold that I think was sent straight from the depths of hell, and I'm still recovering from that. I do think, though, it is worth noting, because I'm sure we're going to bring it up on a future episode, but the whole, like, spy balloon shooting down UFOs.
Like, within the last 24 hours.
Yeah, there have been multiple in the U.S., like, is sort of wild and is, like, sort of a weird coincidence that, well, I mean, like, the UFO community on Twitter is just, like, losing their minds.
Right.
But also our pal Giorgio from the crazy-haired aliens meme fame and Ancient Aliens is, like, really having a field day on Twitter about it. So I think he is, like, convinced that this is for sure, you know, this is the aliens coming back to visit us. Yeah, that's a weird coincidence for this episode, and I don't know what to make of it yet. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next few days, or if it will just sort of be nothing.
Honestly, I don't blame the aliens if they came all this way for the Super Bowl, because, like, Rihanna is back. It's a big deal, so, like, I don't blame them.
Yeah, it's serious business.
Exactly. It's like, those were some, like, hard tickets to get, so I get it.
Yeah. Frederick's just over here like, thank God I am in Sweden and, like, not dealing.
Far away from madness.
Having a brush up with this American-centric view of everything. It's like an acting movie.
Sorry.
No, aliens always come to America. There's tons of billions of people on the world, but America is the center for everything.
Yeah, yeah, like, that is a great point.
Eagle screech at the moment, just to, like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, of all the places, yeah. Like, you're not coming here. We're terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll get started with just some, like, basic info about the show and the ideas that, I guess, birthed it, and pseudo-archaeology as a whole. This will sort of be more of a general overview of things, discussion of things. We will get into, like, some specific sites later, but yeah, I think if we did the whole thing, like, you'll see. The history of this is very lengthy and very, there's a lot. So it would be, like, Frederick has a whole show about it, because you'd need an entire podcast to, like, truly do this all justice. But there have been 19 seasons of Ancient Aliens, with the 19th season, like, just having started up in 2023, 225 episodes. It is produced by Prometheus Entertainment, which, like, of course, that's the name of it, with executive producer Kevin Burns, which I think is a little funny to me because it sort of sounds like a budget brand, Ken Burns. The first two seasons ran on the History Channel, and I think, like, and maybe I'm not remembering, but I feel like it was sort of the first of these types of shows to really mark the downfall of that network.
<It's> like, absolutely. No, that is the timeline right there.
Right. Because everything past that just sort of goes insane and goes downhill. It did get moved over to H2, which is their secondary channel, and becomes, like, the flagship channel on there. I admittedly watched the first two seasons on Netflix with my husband, like, I don't know, over a decade ago now when I was in grad school. And like, here's the thing. I remember that we were totally sucked in and super into it. And like, I remember being like, well, this is a History Channel show. So like, there has to be some legitimacy to this. And like, obviously that's part of the reason that it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I think first season was a bit better on masquerading like a, you know, history type of show, while in the second season, after they've really gone all in on the aliens, because they have a lot more credible scientists in the first season, but then they realized what, you know, happened with their quote mining and all of that, and that they, I don't remember exactly, but I think the show was intended to be science versus pseudoscience type of thing at first. During the production, it changed more towards this approach that they took, where the theory is that ancient aliens are real, and then they look for evidence to support it.
I have insight on exactly what happened because I worked on season two. that was when I started working there. So, oh boy.
Yeah, Annalise has got the inside scoop. So like, obviously we are going to bother her to like relive that traumatic part of her TV life. So yeah, what do you want to tell us about working on the show, what your experience was, what your role was, what happened?
Buckle up. I think this is the first time I've properly talked about this in a public setting and something outside of just like, you know, to friends and family and maybe like, you know, industry colleagues and stuff like that. It was not good. It was my very first sort of proper job on a television show. And that was coming on the heels of several months of unemployment. So I was ultra broke at the time. And I had literally gone from, you know, yelling about the show to my then boyfriend, now husband, you know, because I was channel surfing one night and I saw that it was on. It's like, oh my God, this is garbage. What is this? To literally getting an email the next day from them because they had come across my resume. It had made it to their office and they were looking for people. They were looking for researchers and, you know, people to work on the show. And because I had less than no money, I kind of had to take a job so I could pay my bills.
Yeah.
And yeah, so season two was what I found myself in. And yeah, like you said, the season one, the episodes were like over an hour long because it was originally meant to be like a one-off, you know, special. With air quotes, which is why the episodes, there's only a couple of episodes and they're so long. And it was meant to focus on the Eric Von Daniken stuff, you know, his bibliography, and then just kind of that very general and, you know, at this point, almost gentle, you know, aliens in the Bible, you know, kind of thinking, which back then was like not crazy, crazy dangerous, but just sort of like regular little crazy. And then it did so well ratings-wise, which, you know, I have no idea, honestly, what constitutes good ratings. But, like, I guess it did well enough that it got picked up for a second season. And they kind of panicked because they were like, oh, wait, how are we supposed to, like, what are we supposed to talk about? And not only did it get picked up for a second season when it was meant to be kind of like a one-off special, they were asked to create more episodes. So it's like, okay, we have to double the amount of episodes. What do we put in those? How do we fill the time and the airspace? And when I say we were scraping the bottom of the barrel to try to find topics and stories that could, you know, potentially fill up an hour of television, like it was hard. And
yeah,
that's why it started going a little off the rails, because it's just like, you know, we were trying to find anything, literally anything that could have, you know, a couple of minutes of narration and maybe some photos to fill the time and pad out the episode to make it work. So it was desperate. And again, we were scraping the bottom of the barrel being like, oh my God, how are we going to fill all these episodes? And that's why the topics got a little bit more ridiculous. But it was still, it wasn't still fully off the deep end. It was like in the pool, swimming around, but it hadn't really gone off the deep end fully yet. And it was like, even then, like looking back on the episode topics and the ones that I worked on specifically, it wasn't, it really hadn't gone dangerous just yet. It was silly. It was, you know, it was ridiculous. It was silly. It was meant to be entertainment.
Right.
It hadn't really fully gone off the deep end yet. And it, that was like a more gradual process that occurred as time went on, and it kept getting renewed for season three, season four, five, six. It's just like, what do we do? How do we fill all these things? And each season there would be more episodes that would needed to be done. And so one of the things we would do is we would go to the Crazy People websites and look to see what people were talking about and to see if it was something that we could turn into, you know, something within an episode. So it's like, what are people on? I'm trying to, oh God, what were the websites that we'd go to? We'd go to abovetopsecret.com because that was like message boards of anything from like, you know, tinfoil hat, the government's coming to get me stuff, to aliens, to random other stuff. So like that was a good source that we'd always check. I think Crystal Links was another one we needed to get a little bit more sort of woo-woo about it. And, you know, things would sort of go off from there on tangents. And again, it was there were a lot of sort of good old standbys that they always liked doing. And I think that's like jumping ahead on the outline, which is they always loved talking about things in South America. I mean, yeah, big things with big rocks. Things mm-hmm. in South America are always like a good topic to return to. And then, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine how outrageous it is now, 19 seasons deep. Because again, in season two, we were just like, oh my God, how are we going to fill six episodes? I think it was, or maybe more, I forget.
Yeah, that answers a lot of questions.
Yeah, it was like six episodes. Yeah, it was six episodes. Everybody had two because, you know, we work in teams. And so it was like one researcher, an associate producer, I think a story producer, you know, we all kind of work in teams together and everyone would be in charge of two episodes. So yeah, there were six episodes. And we were just like, how are we going to fill all six episodes? So yeah, it was a time, and I feel okay talking about it now because I've had a lot of therapy. I definitely came out of that experience with some really, really bad PTSD because it was a horrible, toxic place to work. I mean, the aliens were the least of the problems in that office.
Oh, no.
And yeah, I feel okay talking about it now because, yeah, therapy has really helped. I can talk about it and think about it without having an anxiety attack, which is lovely. And Kevin Burns died a couple years ago, so I feel okay talking about it now.
Oh, geez, yeah. I didn't even know he died. Oh, so yeah, now yeah. I feel bad making fun of his name.
Yeah. So that happened. So it's like, you know what? I feel okay about it. But my immediate coworkers on that job were some genuinely lovely people. There were some terrible people, but there were also some genuinely mm-hmm. lovely people because for TV production and even stuff like this, it's literally just a job for 99% of the people in the office. Like, it's just a job. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all contract. We go from job to job. Sometimes you're there for, you know, a week, a couple of weeks, a couple of months, you know, you're just there doing a job and you try to do it to the best of your ability and move on to the next thing. Like 99% of the people in there did not really care about what was going on. It's like, yeah, it's silly, but you know, whatever. It's a job, it's a paycheck, you know. Mm-hmm. It'll keep me employed for a couple of months. That's cool. That's really all people kind of focus on for stuff like that. And there were a couple of people there who, you know, some of the subjects would be like, oh, you know, oh, that's interesting, or oh, I never really thought about it that way. But like no one there had really like consumed the Kool-Aid. I think that maybe came later yeah. because I remember checking a couple of years ago when just to see, because I think it was the first time they announced that they were doing that like Alien Con convention. And I was curious to see if any of the people that I worked with way back then were still there. And a couple of them were. And that actually made me really sad because it's like, guys, there's so many better things out there. Like, why did you stay here? It's not even that good. Like, it doesn't even pay that well.
Yeah. So for you, it was like very much like, this is just a job and I need a paycheck. There wasn't really like a sense of like, I'm going to go in and like try to change the narrative or try to, you know, make it not so crazy.
Yeah, it was mostly I just needed a job. I realized that it's like, okay, well, you know, this could be a good learning experience because I'm an archaeologist. But here mm-hmm. I am literally like in the belly of the beast. I can see how it works and how this all happens, which, you know, would hopefully provide some kind of insight as to like, yeah, how and why a show like this gets made. And I realized very, very quickly that because I was so low on the like production ladder, researchers are basic, depending on the production, researchers are often just a step above PAs, production assistants. So mm-hmm. it's usually treated as an entry-level job and you really have no power at all.
Gotcha.
So the most I could do was just make sure that like the names and dates were correct. and my joke is always that with like every sentence of narration, half of it would be true. Like the first half of the sentence would start out fine. You know, it's a real place that really exists. You know, here's a real, you know, date in history. And then it would just go off the rails.
So yeah.
At the very least, I tried to make sure that the names and dates were correct. And that the correct images would be shown on screen when things were being talked about. So yeah. that was the most I had the ability to do. But yeah, because I was so far down the ladder, it's like I had no power to make any decisions, to change anything. And, you know, that's just how it goes. It's like it's not up to me. It's always up to the people who are working above me, and mostly just the executive producer and the network. Those are the ultimate decision makers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's such a valuable perspective to have. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you talking about it, especially if it's like the first time since that you feel comfortable enough to address it in public. So I'm hoping there's not like an NDA or something that we're going to
honestly, at this point, after everything that's happened, like I don't care. Like it's been so far in the past, like terms have expired. And then with everything that's happened in the industry since then, you know, with, you know, all the sort of, Me Too and Time's Up stuff, it's just like, you know, the NDAs aren't doing anybody any favors. And if I can save one person listening to this from working at that office, then my job will have been done, because I want to make sure that nobody, especially people who are just starting in the industry, and there, you know, there's a lot of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, optimistic, recent graduates who have, you know, maybe moved to LA to work in the industry, and they see these job postings and they think, yes, this is it, this is my first job. Don't work here. Do not work there. It's not worth it. It is not
worth it. There you go.
Save yourself the trouble and the trauma and find somewhere else to work.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it's been really helpful, you know, moving forward for you now that you've had a chance to process it. But now that you're doing everything on TikTok and everything to where you're going in and debunking, you know, things that people say that are incorrect about various aspects of archaeological finds, I'm sure that experience of working on that show and knowing exactly how those things are going to get twisted around into something spooky or mysterious or conspiracy theory, like, has helped inform your own content that you're making.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Because I learned how to write that narration, and like, that was something that I had to do for part of my job requirements. Like, every now and then I'd have to come up with some narration to help with writing the script and like help the producers that I was working with, because as they say, we all wear many hats. You only get paid for one, but you wear like six. You know, it's like, if you give me a minute, I can get back into that narration voice and just spit out in Ancient Alien style, you know, could it be? some experts say. And, you know, that's how they get away with it, because it's all presented as open-ended questions. And, you know, it's not factual statements, it's open-ended questions.
Right. That's great. Yeah. And I do have to mention, I loved your TikTok video that I came across yesterday. I don't know. My mind is like a haze of cold medicine at this point, but where it was something about the the timeline of when the pyramids were built versus when the Romans were visiting. But I love that your opening was like, first of all, the Romans didn't discover shit.
And I stand by the statement.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, that's a good point. But it's like one of those things where, yeah, like that type of language and that type of presentation matters so much. Mm. And yeah, like, and I'm sure Frederick has noticed this as well doing a podcast, but and you have more of a background, or you have an actual archaeology background, but I've had to sort of relearn and reframe the way I talk about a lot of these things, because you've been fed these narratives about like the way that ancient peoples behaved or what they were capable of. And yeah, so it's been an interesting process. I've learned a lot. My archaeology bullshit detector has gotten significantly better.
Excellent.
That's great.
Okay, so I guess, Frederick, so you've been going through the show, you're doing this podcast on it, and I guess, for lack of a better word, we're going to say favorite, but what would you say has been sort of your favorite topic or episode that you've covered so far on your show, and why is that?
Ooh, favorite worst or...
favorite, worst, whatever. What's the most egregious thing they've done?
I mean, it is from season 2, I hope Annalise didn't work on that one, but it's called Aliens and the Third Reich.
Oh, that was not me, thankfully. that was the guy who sat next to me.
And it was very strange. I thought it was something I was going to, you know, knock out of the park in the afternoon. And I thought, you know, I will bring in a comedian and we will just blow this episode off and make it easy for myself. And then there's a name that pops up, Jan van Helsing, mm-hmm. who is an active Holocaust denier that they just in the episode. And I just realized... Oh no, I can't really take the route I had planned, so I had to go in, and then there's just popping up a lot. There's another pair of literal Nazis, not quoted in the show, but they build a lot of segment on the show on their writing without telling you about it. So there's Norbert Jürgen Rathofer and Ralf Ettel, who is two German neo-Nazis, who they based the Vril part on.
Ooh.
So these two wrote a lot about the Vril society from an esoteric Nazi point of view. Mm-hmm. And it's those who made up Maria Orsic, for example, and things like that. So that was my worst episode.
Ooh. Yeah, you're like, this is going to be hilariously bad.
Yeah, and,
this is terrible.
Because, like... Yeah, so season 2, it is, like you said earlier, Megan, that like that what this was sort of like the beginning of the decline of the History Channel. Like it was like coming straight out of that, you know, like 10-year period where the History Channel was like only World War II. It was the World War II channel. So it's like, of course they had to tie in something World War II related. And of course, like that whole like secret Nazi alien spaceships esoteric thing was like that was super popular at the time, and I'm trying to remember, since I did not work on that episode, I have no idea how and why they found literal neo-Nazis, to quote. It's possible they weren't out publicly at the time, but I also have no idea, because yikes.
Yeah.
Oh, Jan van Helsing, or Jan Udo Hauli, that's his real name. He chose Jan van Helsing because Van Helsing kills bloodsuckers. And you know, bloodsuckers, they are Jews, of course. And he was convicted for Holocaust deniers before his name was brought up on the episode.
Cool.
And the strange things are, you know, most of it is written in only German. Mm-hmm. And I have luckily some contacts that could help me with that. So I have no idea how they really got into it, but I think it's somehow either via Childress, who has quoted a lot from Ralf Ettel and Rathofel.
I would believe that 100%. Yep.
Or Van Däniken, who is also relying on these three in his writing, and Van Däniken, as I understand it, also have some loose connections with the old Nazi movement, the esoteric, you know, from the 1950s Vienna movement. Mm-hmm. So probably from their sources in their books, but yeah, they are highly problematic, and it's
problematic
never
is an understatement. Oh my God! Yeah, thankfully that was not my episode. I did. What did I do? Season two. I did Underground Aliens, and then I forget the title of the episode, but basically it's the one that first features Göbekli Tepe, and so that was actually my first instance of finding out about Göbekli Tepe. And actually emailing Jens, and like that's how we first connected and knew each other, and so now we're friends. Because I had to email him so many times over the years. But yeah, those were my two episodes. So it's like nice, safe topics about big rocks.
Yeah, right.
I think those two are the ones I had least issues with. Yay. So I think you made something right on them.
Right. Yeah, like I said, it's just big Yay. Rocks. Like you can't get too mad at big rocks.
Excellent. Yeah, well, and that's like, good Lord. We did an Atlantis episode and a few other things. Like, there's so much of this that, like, why is it always Nazis? Like, it's just unbelievable how much of this sort of like conspiracy theory, weird stuff, pseudoscience stuff, like, ultimately you end up at, yeah, just like, very terrible places, and like not even being subtle about it in some cases. Yeah. So it's easy to do.
Yeah, it stems a little bit from the 1950s when they tried to regroup. So there's this Vienna group that came together and started to talk about these esoteric subjects and try to recruit members from it. And then they added the UFO lore to it. And from there, it started of, you know, spread outwards.
I think a lot of it is still like that legacy of the History Channel being like predominantly World War II documentaries and shows for so long. And then that sort of transition from like legitimate World War II documentaries and shows, because I guess people want to know, and then fading into something weird that was also heavily, very heavily, because it's literally based on the writing and works of Erich von Däniken, who, as we know, is also very problematic.
Yeah, right. And on one hand, I see why they would have done the episode, I think, because like, as far as I understand, there was a part of the Third Reich and everything, like they were interested in occult things. Am I misspeaking when I say that? There's some element of that.
It depends on who you're asking.
Okay.
Some researchers do claim, but from what I've gathered, it's mostly Himmler. The rest of them weren't really interested in this esoteric nonsense. For example, Anthroposophist was heavily persecuted. It's wrong since it's just Anthroposophist, but they didn't like this esoteric type of stuff that Himmler was interested in. He wanted a lot of this, the Lands of Jesus and finding Atlantis and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But then general, top layer of the Nazi party were not impressed by those type of things. Even if it's later has become part of the mythology, there's a quite great book that I have here in my sources on it, actually. Yeah, Godric Clark. He has two books, The Occult Roots of Nazis and The Black Sun Iron Cult, Esoteric Nazis. So if you're interested in these topics, those two books are great, and he's a very good author and quite popular within that type of research.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's super interesting. But yeah, so my point was just like, I guess I see if they knew of that sort of, that there was some sort of connection there that they're like, well, this will be an interesting, like Emily said, we'll tie in the World War II thing. But it's like, but then like, I don't know. What is the message we're trying to deliver here? Like, oh, the Nazis were right. Like, no, there were aliens and they're the ones that figured it out. Like, I don't know. It's just, it ends up being not great.
Yeah. It is absolutely not great. And I know for a lot of the subsequent episodes, because let's see, I worked on season two. I worked on a different show at the same production company for, I think, like season three and season four. I think it was long enough to be both of those, and then came back for season five. I don't know. I think my brain has blocked out a lot of this at this point. But there was always at least one sort of like World War II / Third Reich mystical technology episode in every season, because that was almost like it was almost like too easy to put those episodes together. Yeah. I'm genuinely wondering, because again, like, my immediate coworkers were very lovely people, so I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they literally just did not know that many of the people they were pulling these sources from were like literal neo-Nazis. But again, because like the, you know, air quote experts, like David Childress and everybody, would supply material and be like, hey, if we're going to talk about this, you guys can pull stuff from here, here, and here. And they'd be like, oh, great. Perfect. So yeah, it's just, oh my God, it was super weird. Super weird. You know, the whole thing was problematic, of course. But, and I think it's also worth taking into consideration that because this was such a toxic place to work, people, and again, this was in the before times when, you know, you'd just go to work or go to school like deathly ill because you needed to go to work. And so when I tell you that there were, you know, days and weeks when people were at work in the office when they had no business being there because they were so sick, mm-hmm. like, I would not be surprised if, you know, cold medicine and illness delirium factored into some things, because really, truly, the state in which I saw a lot of my coworkers, and myself included, I worked through shingles. Because if your butt was not in the seat, you were not getting paid. And you had to be there. And it was it had to be a literal emergency for you to not be at work. And even then they'd be like, can you make sure to check your email at least? And, you know, keep on top of things, you know, from the hospital or something like
right.
that. Yeah. Oh, so, goodness. Not great. Not great.
Well, yeah. Okay. So yes, the show is problematic. We're going to talk about it, I'm sure, more, but we can, I guess, shift forward here to just what birthed the show in the first place, because you guys have been hearing names like Von Daniken and people like that. But it's based on this hypothesis that there were ancient astronauts, which is intelligent extraterrestrial beings that have been visiting Earth for thousands of years and made contact with both prehistoric peoples and those in antiquity. Major ideas, as far as I have gathered, which you guys can chime in if I've missed anything, but that deities in major religions around the world were actually aliens. Any advanced technologies that these either, I guess, ancient peoples possessed, but that maybe that we also possess today, were essentially given to them or seeded by ancient astronaut visitors. Mm-hmm. Ancient extraterrestrial visitors built many structures on Earth, like pyramids, megalithic structures, like Annalise was talking about. Some, I think, say that it's humans that are descendants or creations of these ancient aliens, or that we evolved independently, but that we owe a lot of our knowledge and religion and culture to visits from extraterrestrials. That's the basics,
yeah, that's basically
as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, like, basically everything was presented as, lots of air quotes, misunderstood alien technology. Like, pretty much anything could be just, you know, explained as misunderstood alien technology, or, deities from ancient cultures and ancient religions were all really aliens, which is why they're always depicted, you know, kind of floating above things and with like magic powers and stuff like that. Like they were aliens. Yeah.
And you know how they go up and down? That means that they have spaceship.
Exactly. Yep.
Literal quote from the show, basically.
Yeah, and I have so many thoughts on this. So, okay. So that's the basic gist of this. So this gets, I guess ideas have been around for a while. They get popularized in the latter half of the 20th century, so sort of in the 60s, 70s, and then later by Ancient Aliens, by the books Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken. You guys have been hearing that name. There's also The 12th Planet by Zakaria Sitchin. I guess, though, they potentially pulled their ideas from a paper that was published by, or the roots of their ideas from a paper that was published by Carl Sagan in 1963 called Direct Contact Among Galactic Civilizations by Relativistic Interstellar Spaceflight. So in that paper, he posits that based on the Drake equation, we should have some number of intelligent civilizations within the Milky Way. And, you know, it seems more like he's just going through this thought experiment of how would a story of ancient contact with extraterrestrial beings get preserved? How would that play out in the narratives and the stories that get passed down by ancient cultures? He uses as an example how the story of first contact with Europeans gets passed down by Tlingit oral traditions after they met French explorers in 1786, and then, you know, how that account gets written down 100 years later by anthropologist George Emmons. And in that story, you know, you kind of get these extra elements of like Tlingit cultural and spiritual beliefs, but the story itself is accurate. So he's like, well, potentially you could get these oral traditions preserving some evidence of alien contact with someone coming from somewhere in the Milky Way. And I'm hoping that one of you can speak on this. He mentions Babylonian stories of the Apkallu, which are fish-like beings who emerged from the sea to teach agriculture, mathematics, and the arts to early Sumerians. And basically just saying like, well, can't say it's not aliens, like, because that's sort of weird.
Not saying it's aliens, but. See, that's really funny to me because that is such a classic move to, one, randomly combine and conflate Babylonian and Sumerian culture as the same things at the same time, sort of two different things. And okay. I mean, it's a classic. It is a classic move. And then also to assign that to not the absolute favorite for the ancient astronaut folks, which is the Anunnaki, which are, you know, the mysterious, totally alien entities that came down in their little UFO ships, it is depicted, and taught the good Sumerian people how to write and agriculture and build things and math and all that good stuff. So it's gotten to the point where that's like a buzzword now. And people love throwing around stuff about the Anunnaki, which is funny because it's like, guys, that's like, tell me you know nothing about the religion and stories of ancient Mesopotamia without telling me you know nothing about it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
I will not stand for this Anunnaki erasure.
And to be fair, like, I pulled that information like from, I think, just the Wikipedia summary of it, so it is very possible that it was not written correctly. So who knows, maybe he meant what you were talking about, I don't know. But either way, like, yeah, there are sort of these like stories that have been passed down about ancient cultures that, like, yeah, the people just kind of go in and like, can't say it's definitely not aliens, but it's like, well, you could say that about anything. Yeah, and I you're right, like, that is ringing a bell that a lot of people focus on, like, the Sumerians. So anyway, all sounding familiar. The ideas in this paper, though, are later included in a book that he co-authors with Soviet astrophysicist Yosef, couldn't tell you how to pronounce his name. I should have looked it up.
Shklovsky.
Yeah, Shklovsky.
Aha! Shklovsky. Oh my gosh. I can't say it like with my cold right now. I can barely talk like normal English right now. I'm very sorry. Shklovsky. There we go. Called Intelligent Life in the Universe. And I think Sagan is sort of later like, oh, we sort of fucked up like putting this ideas out there because, you know, he's like, maybe Von Daniken and Sitchin took these ideas and ran with them and it's become bigger than us. And this is, this was not, what's the quote? Widely perceived as a bad idea.
Yeah.
Some influence he definitely had. And a fun thing, he's even in the first movie on Ancient Aliens back in the 1970s, Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. But especially Van Daniken pulled a lot more from Morning of the Magicians by Louis Powell and Jacques Berger.
Okay.
So gotcha. He got a lot of inspiration from this French book published in 1960.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, yeah. Either way, Sagan probably didn't help. But yeah, there's a few things that, you know, get, as these things go, things get out of hand. Yeah. And I mean, the show itself, like we've mentioned, like it's all over the place at this point. I'm sure what I should have done before this episode is watched one of the episodes from season 19 or 18 just to like see where they've ended up, because
I'm pulling up the Wikipedia right now to see what the episodes are. Or
I think they even started a reboot by now.
Oh my god, yeah, of course. I mean, you'd have to start recycling. I mean, they were already recycling episode ideas and stories in like season 5. So I can only imagine.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, throughout the show, you have a few locations pop up, and it's quite nice to see Giorgio saying different things about them in each episode, contradicting himself between them.
It's great.
Yeah.
The Wikipedia has also reminded me that even though that whole experience for me is nothing but trauma and bad times, one good time came out of it. And that is the immense like career highlight that has been seeing South Park and Action Bronson make fun of Ancient Aliens. And Action Bronson specifically watched one of my episodes. So thank you. Thank you and good night.
Yay.
Yeah, like literally that's the best way to watch Ancient Aliens. I will just say that.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, and so sort of like wrapping up the background information on this, and I'm sort of going to skip around a little bit here because, as I expected, we all have a lot to say about these things. Really, this whole idea, like it's all pseudo-archaeology, which is just a fancy way of saying it's fake. And it, to me, it just discounts all like human ingenuity and creativity. And you know, I do this show, so it's like we do this show looking at like spooky things or weird things and like what could be the science behind that. And so I see how the idea of like maybe there was alien contact or like there's something actual, you know, going on and to explain deities or whatever in the past. Like I sort of understand why that might be like that's sort of fun to speculate about. But like we said, it can lead to some very dark places very quickly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like just also as we've learned time after time, like people's brains are just inherently weird and they do weird things and we think up weird things and we're creative. And it's not like these people living a few thousand years ago had like significantly different brains than ours. Like they're thinking about things and are capable, yeah, obviously capable of a lot of things and building incredible things. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
That's my little TED talk.
Right. Shout out to humans
about that.
For all the creativity and ingenuity, because that's exactly it. That the pseudoscience and specifically pseudoarchaeology really just erases all of that by saying, "Oh, it's all alien technology or misunderstood alien technology." It's like you are just completely negating any and all moments of immense creativity and ingenuity on humans' parts, and that sucks.
Yeah. And like, while I get that it's, you know, appealing to be like, wouldn't it be super cool, like, if we met aliens before? It's like, yeah, but it's also super cool that these people did all these incredible things and built all these incredible things, like, without having some sort of like supernatural, like extraterrestrial help to do them. So I don't know, like, appreciate your own ancestors for a second.
Yeah, it's like, your ancestors were super cool. Like, don't take away their accomplishments.
Right. And as you, both of you know, like, these shows have had a huge impact. I guess the 50th anniversary of Von Daniken's book, Chariots of the Gods, I've already forgotten the name of it.
It's okay, it's not worth remembering.
Was in 2008. Was in 2018. And up to that date, over 65 million copies of it have been sold. So that is painful. And sorry, Frederick, we're going to be U.S. centric again for a minute.
Oh, no.
But the annual survey of American fears, which I'm sure, like, that's got to be a nightmare to conduct. But it's conducted by Chapman University, and it apparently tracks paranormal beliefs. But the results from the 2018 one said that 41% of Americans believe that aliens visited Earth in the ancient past. That's like a lot of people.
That's a lot.
I don't think that 4 out of 10 people that I've met think that. So I'm going to start polling people that I know. 57% believed in the existence of Atlantis or other ancient civilizations.
That tracks.
Oh, dear. And that these numbers are up significantly from the 2016 results. And I didn't get a chance to find the 2020 results, and I don't even know if they would have done it because, you know, 2020 seems like they might do it every 2 years, but...
But we're a little busy in 2020.
Yeah, but, like, I would not be surprised if they, I guess, were up even more. But it's like, that's so many people that... And I guess I should know because, like, I've made videos about things on TikTok, like, about... crop circles and, like, ancient alien stuff and just, like, things calling it out for being racist and for being problematic. And, like, so many people pop in and they're like, I had no idea that, like, this was a problem. And it's like, yep, it's not great. So I don't know. So I suppose I shouldn't be surprised, but yeah, like, we're a nightmare.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
But I'm not too surprised with those numbers, to be honest, for being in America. Mm-hmm. It lines up quite well with the amount of religious people in the U.S. at the same time. So one strange things can tie into another, in a sense.
And the overall abysmal state of the education system as well, that contributes to it too.
Doesn't help.
Yeah.
I understand that you pay a lot for your schools over there, so I guess it can be a bit challenging.
I pay a lot for college, that's true. Yeah, they don't put any of our tax money towards our K-12 education. No, so that's part of the problem.
Public schools, it is dire. Private schools might be a bit better.
Yeah.
I did not go to a private school. I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
In theory, it would be better.
Well, and I guess to not be totally U.S.-centric, and we have somebody who lives in Sweden here, Frederick, would you say, like, how are these things seen in your part of the world? Like, is ancient aliens a thing there? Like, do people, is it even, like, shown there at all? Because it's obviously, it's a U.S. show or syndicated in the U.S. So yeah, like, does any of this, is it worth it? Were you just nightmares and the rest of the world's like, look at these idiots? Or, like, is there some of this happening there as well?
We have a UFO movement, even if it's not as large and as in the U.S. and we consume a lot of American ideas, shows, and everything. So if something becomes popular in the US, we definitely get it sooner or later here in Sweden, no matter what it is, for the good and the bad. And people are definitely into this esoteric, alternative history type of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Annalise, you probably noticed that, but you know that sometimes people ask you what you're doing or what you're studying, and you say, oh, I'm archaeologist, and you get, oh, have you heard about, and they spew some.
All the time. All the time.
Welcome to my show. That's exactly what I do
here. Literally all the time. All the time.
So, yeah, it's to the point that if you're not sure what type of people are around you, just keep quiet because they are numerous enough to, you know, you will meet them in real life too.
Yeah. I will say, though, that one of the things I do enjoy doing, like, if it's like a, you know, a moment where I'm with new people, like new to me people, and maybe we're in like a social setting, and like the planets have aligned where I have like the right amount of energy, it's a good day, and maybe there's been a drink involved already, I will turn on the Q&A, and, you know, inevitably the fact that I'm an archaeologist comes up, and then the questions will start just like, okay, let's do this. Keep them coming. I will answer your questions. Let's go. And it is such a productive and fun conversation with the right people.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that is my public engagement for the month. But yeah, it always happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I guess, like, good on the people who are willing to do those types of things, like on, you know, various live streams and TikTok live and everything, where they're like, hey, just come on here and like ask mm-hmm. me anything. It's like, I can't, I'm not fast enough on my feet, I think, to think about a lot. You've seen how thorough some of these notes are. Like, I gotta really think about it in advance if I'm gonna not sound like an idiot talking to people about stuff. Yeah, okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
Okay, so this is probably a good chance, as we're sort of like getting towards the end of our time here, just to, I don't know, I just wanted to get some thoughts on like some of these things, or maybe just get the chance to ask actual archaeologists, like, why are these things weird? So sorry, Annalise, I hope you have the energy to deal with like what
Let's
you
do it,
described.
Do it. I'm going to be getting more coffee after this. Let's do it.
Well, I guess before we get into that, like, is there anything else that you guys want to sort of like, I don't know, add about just general thoughts on the show or thoughts on this whole like ancient aliens, ancient astronauts concept that we did not talk about?
I'm just mad that these dang aliens keep following me everywhere I go. I'm trying to be free from aliens, but they follow me everywhere.
I'm sorry, Annalise. We couldn't have learned that you worked on the show and then like not made you come back on here. But you could have said no.
Part of the thing is like, you know, like I said, like I wanna tell people about the reality of it. And if I can save one person from working there, then my job is mm-hmm. done, because other people, especially newcomers to the industry who are just starting and looking for that first job, don't work at this production company. Do not do it. I think it's just kind of it's a bummer that it's gone on this long. I can't say that I'm 100% surprised. But yeah, to me, it's a real bummer that it's been going on this long and that it's gotten so deep into really genuinely harmful rhetoric. And so it's a bummer.
Mm. Yeah. 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 And we'll sort of touch on the problematic stuff one more time before the end, but yeah. Okay, so Annalise, yay, we have somebody who actually worked on season 2 episodes on like Woo-hoo. Megalithic
big rocks.
Structures. So yeah, big rocks that got moved around, and it sort of seems unbelievable that they would have managed
how could they do such a thing?
Move them. How could they do it? So you mentioned the Göbekli Tepe. There's also, you know, Stonehenge is obviously a big one. A lot of times, and like, I don't actually know for the Göbekli Tepe, but there's like some sort of like astronomical tie-ins to how they arrange things with that. Am I correct?
Incorrect for Göbekli Tepe, but correct for other places. Because basically all the big rock stuff happened during the Neolithic period for whatever reason. That was the period of history, and the Neolithic period is happened at different moments depending on where you were in the world. So like what is now modern day Turkey, they kind of had their Neolithic moment first, or like earlier in the timeline, and then the Neolithic period in England, for example, happened much later. But in any event, the cool thing to do was to take big rocks and arrange them in fun ways. That was the thing that people liked to do, and like everybody was doing it. It was the hotness. And then eventually people moved on to arranging other things in fun ways. But yeah, so like, yeah, Göbekli Tepe does not have astronomical alignments, but it's cool for other reasons. Stonehenge doesn't have astronomical alignments, but it has solar alignments.
Yes.
Because again, that was the hotness at the time. So that was the trend. And then some other sites, you know, elsewhere in the world, like I know that we featured Karahunj. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, now we look at it with like 21st century eyes and we can say, oh, it lines up with this. That's what we are seeing. The question, of course, is, was that something that was occurring to the folks back then? What were the positions of things back then? Because things kind of move around a little bit. You know, considering are we putting a pattern or an alignment on something because that's what we're seeing? Was that something that the ancient people were seeing? All of that good stuff.
Right. Which always struck me as silly because it's like, well, of course they were seeing it. Like, A, they didn't have all the light pollution that we have now. So, so like anything with stars and constellations and all that, like they're going to see everything. And yeah, I mean, that's the way that people were navigating, like either using the sun's position or, you're using it to tell some sort of time, whatever. Of course, you're going to make observations about the world around you and notice patterns. Like that's just human nature. That's how our brains work.
It's what we do.
It's not that weird. So like that stuff never really struck me as particularly odd, and I'm sure like you guys are like like people are just observing things because that's what happens. We learn patterns,
but what they do is they call it advanced.
And like from what I understand, like I think in a lot of the like circles of like the recent stat, which I have no idea if this is correct, you guys would probably know better than me, is like, oh, like hunter-gatherers, if you like looked at the amount of time that they were spending on, you know, that part of their life, like the hunting and the gathering, was probably like, you know, 20 hours per week. And it's like, well, you got a lot of time to fill with, like, you got to come up with something to do. Like, might as well put some big rocks together.
Exactly. Like, you need to do something. Why not arrange some big rocks in a nice pattern that is aesthetically pleasing?
Right. Make art, do something cool. Like it's, to me, some of it is, I'm sure some of it had, you know, religious, spiritual, cultural significance. I think I had read that the Göbekli Tepe was probably a gathering place for like social or spiritual functions for the region.
I mean, if you want to know about what's going on at Göbekli Tepe, just go follow Jens on Twitter because he works there. That is the site that he works at. The Göbekli Tepe team is all on Twitter, and they have everything on their website, Tepe Telegrams. I always tell people to go there so you can just read the information directly from the people who work at this site. And yeah, so it was, you know, from what's been found so far, and I really hope I'm remembering this correctly, it is apparent that it is a place where people came together for communal celebrations of some kind, because there has been evidence of communal feasting, beer brewing, large-scale beer brewing, which I love because it shows that brewing beer in large quantities was more of a priority for humans at that point in time than building permanent settlements. Priority. And yeah, there is very likely a religious component to it. And that is because from the Neolithic period, especially that which is what's called the pre-pottery Neolithic, so that's like pre-Neolithic almost. It is a wild and psychedelic time in human development. And there is no possible way I can do it justice in like a 2-minute summary because it's bananas. It's so weird and so cool and so trippy. And there's vultures involved and bulls are there too. And it is like, it's a giant puzzle that is missing so many pieces, but the pieces we do have are crazy. And it's just like, I need a time machine. I just need to go back and look. Like, I'm not even going to bother asking questions. I just want to look and see what the heck was going on because this is bananas what was happening back then. And I mean, the themes, there are themes that are evident in lots of Neolithic sites in that part of the world. Again, like vultures, bulls, that sort of stuff. There's a heavy dose of ancestors involved as well. But as far as like the specific purpose and the specific rituals that would have happened here, no idea. Absolutely no idea, because this was also before people had bothered to figure out writing. So rudely, they did not write things down.
Yes. And yes, I mean, the crux of it is, which I can summarize probably badly, but is like we're talking about hunter-gatherers. We don't have permanent settlements for things to get preserved. People are moving things around. Like you're just
Seasonal settlements was the thing back then.
Yes. So we don't have that. And we just have these sites like Göbekli Tepe, which, you know, obviously was more permanent and was important to them. And I guess before this was discovered, my understanding is that archaeologists were sort of under the impression that these types of structures were beyond the capabilities of hunter-gatherers living at the time, and this sort of shifted that narrative. So it's like Annalise says, you don't have these permanent settlements to get all this like in-depth day-to-day information about these people without, you know, going back in a time machine. You sort of have these like mysterious quote-unquote sites like Göbekli Tepe, and you're trying to piece together information from that. So it's like, it's just sort of the lazy way to just be like, well, must just be aliens. Like, they didn't figure it out. Like, it's just weird because aliens. So, yeah. So the megalithic structure thing doesn't really freak me out that much because it's like, you know, people are going to find ways to express themselves and do weird stuff. And I don't know, I watch my kid do weird things all the time when she's bored and stack stuff together. Why wouldn't people do that?
Exactly.
It's fine. We're all out there, like every time it snows, building snowmen and snow forts and whatever. Like I have no purpose behind doing that. I'm just doing it because I feel like it. Pyramids. Would pyramids be considered a megalithic structure, or is that like because
it's, I think it's just a big structure?
It's just a big structure. Okay.
I don't know. Like
it's individual stones, sort of like stacked. Yeah.
Yeah, big individual stone like the menhirs
or hinges.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was just sort of like a dumb, I don't know question because I was like, well, no. The pyramids sort of big rocks, but
that was not one of them.
Great, but yeah. I feel like we probably touched on it the last time that Annalise was on the show, but that they obviously feature very heavily in the Ancient Aliens discourse. And yes, the fact that they are, and again, you could tell me, do they have astronomical or do they have solar alignments?
Well, if you look at them now, they have astronomical alignments. They align up with the Giza pyramid. Pyramids. There are a bunch of other pyramids that people always forget about.
Yeah, right.
And again, there are also a bunch of other pyramids at Giza, but the three big ones, those line up with the stars on Orion's belt. Good for them. We love a good alignment moment. I'm happy for them. And there's a lot of other pyramids, both at Giza. There's a bunch of little ones for like, you know, the queens and stuff like that. There's a bunch further south at Saqqara, and there's a bunch even further south of that at Dahshur, because people were building pyramids, and they built them, and they just kind of put them where they had space.
Yeah, well, and that's sort of like a classic pseudoscience, pseudo-archaeology tactic, is like really focus in on like these things that semi, yeah, like pick and choose what supports what you're mm-hmm. trying to say and just sort of like ignore all the other yeah. evidence. Like, yeah. So that's a big tactic right there.
And the pyramid doesn't really line, or the Giza pyramids or the big three doesn't really line up with Orion if you don't flip
Yeah, you've also got to move things around
so
a little bit.
Inverted. Yeah.
Oh, great. So it's like, sure, they line up, but you got to do like a mirror image of them or something.
Classic, yeah, basically.
Classic pseudoscience. Like, it lines up if you move the map around.
Yeah, so there's sort of like some mental gymnastics involved in making that work.
Like a full floor routine of mental gymnastics.
Yeah, but I like fully remember from like watching the show initially, and again, this was over a decade ago, but there was stuff about like, oh, if you like looked out this tunnel like within the pyramid or something, they would be like exactly aligned with such and such a thing, or I don't know. And it's like, you know what? The sunset aligns with a specific street in Chicago
Manhattan
once a year.
Hinge.
Like,
it
and
aligns
that's
with
pretty
Manhattan,
cool.
Whatever street that is in New York.
Yeah. And no
Take
one's like,
point.
Oh, aliens were definitely involved
Absolutely.
In the planning of these skyscrapers.
Oh, no, it's not aliens at that point. It's stonemasons. It's the Masons.
Oh, and they have like the ancient mm-hmm. knowledge or whatever, like the Illuminati and the stonemasons.
No.
Oh, good Lord. Annalise,
I think you're paid off by big archaeology here. We know that the pyramids function as a giant battery to wirelessly charge the
yes.
UFOs.
Oh,
yes. It's also piloted by the Knights Templar on their way to Atlantis.
Yes. okay, so moving along in the sort of, I don't know, these were things that showed up in across multiple articles that I came across while researching for this episode, but that seemed to be sort of like favorites of the Ancient Aliens crew. So geoglyphs are, I don't know, large features that are carved or drawn in landscapes that are, I mean, they're weird. I don't know a lot about them. I wish that I had, you know, had time or that we had time to go more in depth. So I guess we're going to have to do like a whole geoglyph episode someday. But like the Nazca lines, for example, they're weird. And like, I think Von Daniken, like that comes from his book, that original Chariots of the Gods. He's like, it looks like a runway.
Totally. I mean, they, like I said, they love anything in South America. They love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are in South America. And they're huge. Like they're like miles and miles long and they create this.
And you can only see them from the sky. What?
Yeah. But like, I don't know. So they say that, like, even, like, Von Daniken comes up with this in Chariots of Fire. They, like, latch on to it some in Ancient Aliens. And there was an article by Jason Colavito, or a blog post that I read, that he says it's funny that Ancient Aliens pulled from it, although maybe not, because Annalise was like, we were scraping
bottom
whatever.
Absolutely bottom of the barrel.
yeah, but, like, that other people have pointed out, like, this is sort of a silly thing to attribute to aliens, but like, they are weird though, right? Like, why are they so big?
Hummingbird on the ground?
Yeah, you can do it quite easily with rope and sticks, and we've even found strings and sticks in them, so you just need a team and then you measure it out. You don't need to be up, even if they're, no, I forgot the name of that team, but there were actually a couple who made a hot air balloon out of fabric that's common within the Nazca people, and they actually got that to fly.
Oh.
But under very iffy circumstances, and I'm pulling this out from memory, some backup. But I got it to fly, but it went really bad. I think it got loose and just blew them 20 miles far off somewhere. But yeah, you can do it quite easy on the ground. And we have the strings, we find ceramics and other people. But the question is, did they use it as some sort of ritual walking? Part of their, you know, now I forgot the English word, pilgrimage. Or if it's something else. What we're sure about, it's ritual.
Totally,
as Annalise might.
Yeah. And I guess from that perspective, it's like the whole, like, I'm like, oh, these are really weird, right? But it's like, well, we're out here, people are out here making crop circles and stuff using, you know, string and rope and boards that they're pressing stuff down. And so maybe, yeah, maybe there's some ritual purpose, pilgrimage, whatever. Like, there's clearly some significance to them. But again, I argue, like, maybe people were just like, this would be fun.
It's an art installation.
Or it looks nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks nice. We think this is cool. Like, let's just, let's do this. So, yeah. So there's, those are ones that always stick out in my mind as, like, being sort of very odd. Okay. And so, like, the last big thing that I see come up time after time are the, which I ultimately, again, I don't think they're that weird, but the, there's lots of petroglyphs around the world that look really weird. Like, the depictions of deities, or, you know, it looks like there's a flying saucer coming down to pick people up or talk to people, whatever. One specific one that's brought up in the show, I guess, is Valcamonica in Italy.
Oh my God, that's
Italy,
a name I haven't heard in years.
Which is a huge collection of prehistoric petroglyphs with over 140,000 symbols and figures that were carved starting more than 10,000 years ago, and like these carvings stretch over a period of like 8,000 years. And sorry, my toddler just got home, so you guys are going to hear some toddler yelling in the background. She just got back from swim lessons, okay. So she's very excited. But one specific one that shows up, which I put the little picture in the notes here, is that I think they've pulled from Ancient Aliens, like are these two little figures, and it looks like they're sort of wearing astronaut helmets.
On one hand, I'm really glad that they've given all of the Native American petroglyphs a break by hopping over to Italy for a minute. Because I know that's the other super, super popular one they love. Oh gosh, I forget the name of the site. It's been so long. But yeah, there's all those sites in Utah
Canyon
and stuff like that that have the walls of petroglyphs with the same thing.
Yeah.
It's aliens. And it's like, no, you just aren't familiar with the iconography of this particular people and culture. And it shows.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and they don't have any good method on saying what aliens or what's true and what's not in the petroglyphs. They just, you know, select themselves on no real bias other than it looks weird.
Yeah.
For example, in Scandinavia, we have a lot of petroglyphs of people doing ordinary things with pietism. I'm not sure if it's correct English word, but, you know, with an erection, so we have people with giant erections going around with animals, plowing the fields. So either the Scandinavian were very into some weird stuff, or people just draw things that we don't really understand today.
To be fair, I sort of, for the sake of time, skipped over the geoglyph, the Cyrna Abbas giant. Which is the one in the UK, I think, that's got like the giant erection.
Yeah.
Big old ball. It's like a 26 foot tall erection or whatever.
Why not?
And like, to me, it's like, I don't know, this dude must have been somebody important to them. Or it's the same as kids like going out and like tracing in the snow or whatever with their feet to like make giant penises out in the snow that people could see above with buildings or whatever.
I always say, like, people have always been people. We've literally been like this the entire time. The stuff that people thought was funny back in the ancient day, I guarantee we still find it funny now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I know, like, a lot of the that stuff with like erections and stuff. There's a lot of
humor.
it's always a little bit funny, but like it's also they had a lot of deities
fertility
and stuff, or like fertility stuff that was related. So I shouldn't laugh about it too much, but like, you know, that inner like 12-year-old's like, this is hilarious. So like there's weird stuff in petroglyphs. And I mean, specifically this Valcamonica one, it's like, sure, they sort of look like helmets, but like in the modern sense. And I mean, whatever. In art, like they draw like halos on angels and religious figures that look very similar to what these look like. They you know, mm-hmm. crowns exist, like traditional headwear exists for lots of cultures. Like, why would your conclusion be like,
I know, that that's like the, that's the most boring conclusion you could come to from all of those things.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, ultimately, ultimately with this and a lot of these things, it's just like, it's just sort of the lazy, easy mm-hmm. explanation to be like, it's just aliens. Like, we're not going to put any thought into figuring out like what this actually is. Okay. So yeah. So those are some specific examples of things that I don't know over that I came across several times and just wanted to be able to say like, this is not aliens, you guys. So, which people who've listened to the show know that that's always the conclusion. It's never aliens. I don't think we need to dive too deep into this because this has sort of been a theme throughout, but I guess we'll give you guys a chance to chat about this more if you'd like. But obviously, everything with this whole ancient aliens thing, and like it's still being perpetuated. They're still making this show. There are Annalise can vouch. There are so many TikTok accounts that are just like spewing this bullshit. Like it's problematic. It's, you know, very easily leads to racist ideas and erasure of indigenous culture and just discounting what they were capable of. And to me, like, yeah, you it marks sort of the downfall of like the History Channel, but it also just feels like, I don't know, that there was some turning point where it's like it all leads into like distrust of the government, like distrust of scientists, distrust of big things like the coronavirus and all this stuff. Like it's all connected.
Yeah, totally.
Like we get this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a problem. So I wanted to get your perspectives of like, A, what are the things that, what are the best ways that people can, you know, spot pseudo-archaeology, but like, what do you think is our best move going forward to like move away from these types of programs and sort of like escape this?
Ooh.
Yeah. Path that we're on. And really one of the answers is like what we're doing right now, which is like talking about it on things like podcasts and making TikTok videos and outreach and everything. But yeah, I don't know. I want to give you a chance to vent about it, I guess.
I think the biggest thing as far as like the best way to spot something that might be pseudo-archaeology, pseudoscience, is that if it seems too good to be true or sort of, you know, too outrageous to be true, it probably is. That's usually the way things pop up now. Because you'll see things, mostly on TikTok and, you know, on Twitter and other places around the internet too. Things are often presented as, you know, oh my God, did you know? Followed by crazy, ridiculous, outlandish fact. And like, again, like if it seems outrageous and too good to be true, it probably is. That's probably the best indicator, you know, that should set off the first flag right away. Yeah.
I think like calls to a lot of these like videos and stuff or these ideas will do a lot to make the person feel like they're like in on some sort of secret and that like some group, like whether it's archaeologists or scientists in general or medical science, is like they're trying to hide this from you.
Yeah, it's someone's keeping information from you, someone's hiding things from you, and this person who's talking to you has the real information, and either they will tell it to you or if you subscribe to their service or pay for their like special lecture or something like that, then you will get the real information. That's so many red flags.
Yeah, if there's a monetary thing associated with it. I didn't mention it earlier, but earlier in the notes I had seen that this Smithsonian Magazine article described the strategy taken by the Ancient Aliens show, and I think it's like also a theme in a lot of, you know, YouTube videos, whatever, things online. As a Gish Gallop, which I love the term, so I have to mention it, but was named for creationist Dwayne Gish, And it's a debate technique of basically you're just like spewing out a lot of arguments very quickly, regardless of their strength or accuracy. So just like overwhelming people with a whole lot of BS in a very short time. So they like don't have a chance, or like if you're in a debate, your opponent like just can't even,
you don't even know where to start.
Get a word in, can't even, yeah, like you don't even know where to start like debunking this. Which I guess to some extent is like just how this whole phenomenon feels. Like there's just so much bullshit out there. Like where do you even start to tackle it? But I mean, so I'm a scientist as well. Like my PhD is in volcanology. So like I'm always getting people sending me crazy things about Yellowstone and stuff and worrying about like insane things happening geologically. And I think the other thing that's important to remember is no scientist, like no archaeologist, whatever, is trying to hide mm-hmm. these things from you. Like if you want to find out more, so many of these people are accessible, are online, like you can tweet at them, you could email them, like you can even email like experts at universities, like, and a lot of people will take the time to educate you because like they just want their ideas to be out there. They want to talk to people about what they're passionate about. So that's an important thing to remember as well.
No, that's totally right. And I just want to say, like Frederick, I'm sure you can confirm this too, that as archaeologists, we love talking about what we do and we will happily talk your ear off about the things that we are interested in, that we're working on, because we like them and we want other people to know how cool and exciting these things are too. So the idea that, you know, again, like big archaeology and there's like this weird shadowy consortium of archaeologists who are hiding information. It's like, no, you have literally never met an archaeologist because we will keep talking forever.
No. You will know that you have met one. That's for sure. And something I think worth mentioning on finding pseudoscience just quickly is, do they give you any sources is it more trust me on this?
So the other thing is just like, is every source that they give you sort of like a secondary or even tertiary source that leads back
or
to
is
something
it like
really
no this
sketchy.
Is my own research and like, who is it now?
Or is it just a 1.5 hour YouTube video?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Is the research you watched a YouTube video once?
My favorite thing is like people going into my TikTok comment sections. If I do like videos about volcanoes or things like that, or like I've done climate change things, and they're like, you should do your research. And it's like, well, I did a PhD.
Literally,
so.
I'm a scientist on this exact topic. But go off. Okay.
So I did do a lot of that.
Telling me that if I'm interested in these topics that I've like made a video on, I should watch a specific or listen to a specific episode of Joe Rogan. You know, if I'm interested in this topic, it's like, my good dude, I have degrees.
I would rather get punched in the face. Okay. Well, before we wrap up, in summary, Ancient Aliens sucks. It's a load of bullshit. There are way more interesting things about ancient culture and people and archaeology that you can learn about from people like Annalise and by listening to Frederick's show. And just be vigilant, I guess. And be like me and start a podcast where you can convince people like Annalise and Frederick to come on it so you can ask them all your really dumb questions about things that are silly. And so one more chance. Do you guys have any closing thoughts? I also want to give you guys a chance to remind people one more time where they can find you, plug any projects you're working on, stuff like that.
I am working at the moment. Nothing to report just yet. Just making more TV because I need to pay the bills. I'm on TikTok, as always. The app has been kind of weird lately, so my videos aren't getting as many views, but I'm still there and I'm still making them. So if you're not seeing them on your For You page, you can just come on over to my profile and they're all there. And hopefully I will have more interesting and exciting things to share and report as the year goes on.
Awesome. Frederick, how about you?
I want to close out on a little thing that if you see good science online or, you know, post explaining stuff, go in and like and comment on it to push the algorithm up so it becomes more visible. Just, you know, gives all your thumbs up, leave a comment, take 2 seconds, and that way you actually help promote good science very easily. And secondly, you should go to diggingupancientaliens.com to find all the info about me and the podcast and where you can find it and listen. Or my new sneaky thing, you go to ancientapocalypse.net. Ooh. And you find all that info there too.
Nice one. Nice.
Nice job.
Good job snagging that URL. That's a good
Scooping up that URL.
Yeah. I found the .com is still available, but it costs like $3,000. And that's way more than I want to spend.
Like a URL should be like $20
We should start a start a GoFundMe for help Frederick buy ancientapocalypse.com. Awesome. That wraps up our episode on ancient aliens. If you liked this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. Check the show notes for links to all our social media accounts, our Discord server, and Patreon. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at spookysciencesisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky.
Spooky Science Sisters is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. For more information or to check out other shows, please visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.